Welcome back to the Boneyard Podcast, everybody. This is your host, Artemis Brower, along with...
Jared Sheffett. How's it going, Artie?
Good, good, good. How we doing, man? How we doing? It's been a while. It's been a little while.
I've been on the DL. It was me on the DL this time. I didn't have a busted lip like Artie did that the last time, but I've been feeling like crap, honestly, man. I'm still like, I woke up this morning and still like not fully over it. Yesterday I was like, oh, I'm good, and then I went into work. Today I stayed home from work and worked from home, and I still like, I'm congested. So, yeah, if I have to pause real quick, I'm going to try to pause. I'm not going to try to cough into the mic and scare all the people driving. But yeah, man, it's been a wild couple of weeks. Done a lot of traveling myself. So yeah, it's been good though.
Yeah, tell us about Myrtle, man. You went down to Dirty Myrtle, did a little golfing down there. I hate that I had to miss it, but sadly I had to go into work on a Saturday afternoon. So
yeah, I mean, I had a blast. Went down and saw one of our buddies after seeing him last weekend, July 4th weekend. Went down and saw one of our buddies, Kyle, and that was a good time. Hung out with his folks, hung out with him and his girlfriend. Played some really good golf. Honestly, best golf that I've ever played, hands down, down there in Myrtle Beach.
And you did it on a good course, because I love that course.
Well, I that's what I'm saying is it was the best course that I've played. It wasn't the best golf I've played.
Oh, okay.
But I will get to that, Artie. So I had a tee time on Sunday to play, and Saturday, I don't know, I did something, tweaked my knee. I thought, I'm getting old, man. I'm getting old. Like, 26 is being rough to me. But yeah, so I canceled my tee time on Sunday. Woke up Sunday morning. Guess what? 100%.
Felt fine. Yeah.
Felt perfectly great. Fine. Drove the 3.5 hours back up here to Winston. And, yeah, and I was like, you know what? It's Did you hear that?
No. Was that Bill?
Yeah, Belle's like coughing up a storm over here. She's probably got what I got.
You get that to my baby girl, man? Don't do that.
She's just I don't know. She's being extra needy. I haven't been home much, but anyways, I'm like, you know what? I'll play 18. Gonna go play by myself. It's like 3:45 when I get back. And I went out there on Sunday after shooting 103 on Saturday on the Tom Fazio course at Barefoot Landing. Mm-hmm. Tied my personal best, 87, on Sunday.
Nice. But this was by yourself?
Yeah, it was by myself.
Oh, it doesn't count.
It doesn't count. I'm not putting it into my handicap.
somebody's got to be there to see that.
I'm not putting it into my handicap, but I will say, personally, I feel great.
You're feeling good. Yeah.
I'm feeling good. Feeling pretty good. Yeah, I know mentally, like, it doesn't count. It's not on my handicap, but still. I tied my personal best, so yeah, still hanging out around a 22.4, but we'll keep it moving. But Artie, it is episode 63, man.
Yes.
So I've got a number 63, and this one's special to me, Artie. I took a little bit of extra time writing this one,
and I usually
I include stats and all the things to back it up. This is more of a sentimental one to me, so I'm going to just roll with it. So, number 63, excuse me, number 63, former Carolina Hurricane. To my knowledge, nobody's worn it since he wore it with the Hurricanes, but Josef Vasicek, okay? This guy, he was drafted by the Hurricanes, I believe, back in 97 or 98. And played the first like 5 years of his career in Carolina. I mean, he's one of my favorite Hurricanes of all time. He's a member of the Stanley Cup team. And then, yeah, after he played for Carolina, after he won the cup, he went on to play for a couple other teams like Nashville. I think he played for the Rangers, but, man, that's crazy. A tweet just popped up on my phone, top five favorite Hurricane players of all time. That's crazy that it just popped up. But, yeah, so Vasicek, he went on to play in the KHL after his NHL career ended. He had 7 years in the NHL. He was playing for a team.
What is the KHL? Is that the Russian league?
Yeah, it's the Continental Hockey League. It's in Russia.
The Kremlin.
Yeah, run by Vladimir Putin himself. And he's played in it, so it's not rigged at all. So Vasilchuk was playing for a team called Lokomotiv Yaroslav. And on September 7th, 2021, the team was on a plane that was flying to, I believe, Minsk, and they're on their way to their first game of the season. And on that plane, they had, I believe, like 42 players, coaches, and then also four youth players on the team. And unfortunately, that plane crashed, killing everybody on board. And the Hurricanes wore a patch number 63 on their jerseys all season. And it's one of those things that I've met Vasilchuk. I have two of his autographs, actually, which is like two of my prized possessions. But after that plane crash, like, no, if you've met him, you knew how good of a person he was just by meeting him. And so I've met him a couple of times, when I was younger, but he meant a lot to all the Hurricanes fans, all the people that have worked in the organization, the players. Even today, he still means a lot. So number 63 is it's very close to my heart. It's my favorite number also. It just happens to be my favorite number. And then,
63 is your favorite number?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
It used to be three. Then I was like, three's too basic. It was 30. I was like, that's still too basic. And I was like, let's go with a number that's still got a bunch of threes and divisible by three and all that. And so I went 63. It's kind of one of those. I mean, if I played in the NFL, it's a lineman number, you know, like.
Right. You'd probably be a 63. You look like a 63.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I see it. I like it.
So I wear it in church league softball. In any game, video game, sports video game, number 63. Partially because of how awesome he was, but also how much he means to the Hurricanes. And it's my favorite number. So, Josef Vasilchuk, shout out to you. Rest in peace, buddy. You were a great Hurricane, and still are. So, but with that, let's go on to some brighter news. Artie?
Yeah, no, beautiful story. I'm happy you shared it. I had no idea who that was before you mentioned him, but I'm actually very, very happy you shared that story with me and the rest of Pirate Nation. And speaking of beautiful stories, we do not have too much to talk about on this episode, but we do have something to talk about. A lot of baseball talk.
Actually, it's all baseball talk.
Yeah, it really is all baseball talk, to be honest with you. Three guys drafted in the MLB draft this past weekend, one being Gavin Williams, Connor Norby, and Thomas Francisco, the usual suspects. We all kind of expected them to go into the draft, and they did get drafted. One that was left out was Bryson Worrell, but we will get into him. But, Jared, first off, I want to talk about Gavin Williams for selecting the first round. How does he fit with that Indians organization?
I think Gavin Williams is he's a good fit, and anybody that keeps up with baseball and prospects and farm teams and how all that works, anybody that keeps up with the Indians knows that they can develop great pitching, and Gavin Williams fits that mold. I mean, you're looking at a 6'4", 6'5" guy who can blow 94, 97 consistently. I think, and I don't think this is too much of a stretch, I think in 5 to 10 years, we may look back at this draft, a draft that has Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker, and we might say Gavin Williams was the best pitcher to come out of this draft.
Wow.
Like, and I'm not the only one saying it. I know there's some guys from ESPN, MLB Network, who have also echoed those same sentiments. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. He joins Trey Benton in the Indians organization.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Trey are like
after that.
Really good friends. We actually talked to Trey. We're gonna try to get him on the podcast. We're gonna try to also get Gavin on the podcast. We've been hitting him up for some time. So if you know him, get him on this podcast. I think that his ceiling is a top line starter. I think that he could eventually be a number two starter in any MLB organization. I do think that he has that ceiling.
So now, so you don't see him as a reliever. You see him as a starter.
Well, the thing is that may change. But even if he does transition into a reliever, Artie, I still see him as having some high upside.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have those guys that can throw some heat, and he's gonna all he's gonna do is keep developing that,
right?
But by the end of it, he might gain another 5-6 miles per hour on his fastball, and he's still got that deadly curve. So to me, what that says is he's got a 4-pitch mix right now, he could easily keep that 4-pitch mix, and but really work on those 2 pitches, the fastball and the curveball, and become a hell of a reliever. I mean, we're talking a high stress reliever, like somebody that you see in the 7th, 8th inning, ninth mm-hmm. inning, even a closer role. We could see that. I honestly think that's his floor, yeah. Barring that he stays healthy and whatnot and avoids any extra surgeries or whatever that may come up down the road. Mm-hmm. But I do see Gavin Williams really taking hold and being one of those guys that when you look at him in a couple years, I don't think he's going to be one of these guys that's hanging around in the minors for the next 5-10 years. I think this is a guy that's going to move up quickly, and he's going to make his debut in the next 2-3 years. He's pitched in a lot of high stress innings. He's already pitched a lot of high quality baseball. So he doesn't need as much time to develop. A lot of times people are weary when they draft a pitcher out of college, but you're also weary when you draft a pitcher out of high school because that pitcher isn't developed. You don't know what they're going to become. In college, when you draft a pitcher, you already have a little bit more of a track record of how they're going to be once they get to the pro ball in the minors, and then as they move up closer to 4A and MLB, right? So if he can keep going on the trajectory that he's on now, I could see him being a consistent starter in the MLB. But he has to stay healthy. He's had some issues in the past, but I think that he will be able to stay healthy with better training. I'm not saying EC has bad training, but once you get into these organizations this is what they do. They spend money to keep these guys healthy, to grow these guys. I think he's in a good place.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. I think the Indians got a really, really, really good ball player in Gavin Williams.
If he
would have
fell one more spot, I would have loved him. I would have loved him with a tomahawk across his chest.
Was that the Braves? They were 24th?
Yep.
You think they would have gone with Gavin Williams?
Oh yeah.
Wow, that would have really brought it home for you. You would have been giddy as hell. That would have really brought it home. Oh, but yeah, no, I think the Indians definitely got a good one. I think he could, you know, possibly be one of the great professional Pirates that we've ever had. I think he's just that good. He proved it in the regular season. He proved it damn sure in the Supers. So really, really happy for Gavin Williams. $2.93 million signing bonus or something like that. So, you know, the man ain't broke no more. If he was broke in college, he ain't broke no more. Yeah,
he ain't no chump change.
He out to eating a Ruth Chris every other night. So, actually, you know, congratulations to him. But moving on to the second guy picked from the Pirates, Connor Norby, 41 overall to the Orioles. You and I both thought he was going to go in the first round, maybe creep into the first round. I think the Orioles stole him at 41. I just think he's that good. I think he can be really that much of a contributor. I know we have here, you know, there's really not much competition at second base on the Orioles. So, I mean, he could really move up the ranks quickly. Talk to us about Connor Norby and his fit with the Orioles.
Yeah, I mean, you just kind of said it right there. I mean, he was picked early in the second round. The thing is when you have the MLB draft, since you can go straight from high school and then move up the ranks that way and forego college, a la Mackenzie Gore, Mike Trout, those names ring a bell. ECU,
Mike Trout, ECU legend.
Yeah, but with that, I think that looking at it, I don't think there's a much better place that he could have gone. at least for his career trajectory. I feel like I'm saying that word a lot. But but yeah, he.
Go get your Webster's real quick. Just go look up some new words.
So yeah, I think that this is a good spot for him to be in. Mm-hmm. As far as where he is and how he can grow in an organization. I mean, I couldn't have, if you asked me who the second baseman on the Orioles was right now, I couldn't tell you.
I damn sure don't know.
I looked it up and I still can't tell you.
I don't follow the Orioles at all, but I damn sure don't know.
Yeah. And I'm sure that some of our listeners, I mean, they're some of our listeners are in the Orioles TV market. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure they're probably pulling their hair out right now, but that's just, we don't know, you know? I mean, he's, whoever's in the Orioles organization isn't a standout guy. Even I know other teams' prospects when they're good prospects. The Orioles don't have anybody at second base right now in their farm system that right. stands out and is like, oh, this is the guy. No. So Connor Norby could very well be the guy. So, I mean, that's one of those things that you hope works out. Now, you see these guys that go in the first round, second round. MLB is not like the NHL or the NFL or even the NBA where you come out of the draft, if you're a first-round draft pick, and go straight to the majors. That doesn't happen ever.
Right.
And if it does, like, it's very, very, very rare. I mean, it probably hasn't happened in 50 years. We'll have our intern look that up. But we don't have an intern. Artie's our intern.
Yeah.
But with that being said, this is as good of a shot of any for him. Now, would we have liked to see him go in the first round? Yes, but he's close enough in the second round. In the first round, like, it doesn't mean as much in baseball. It's not like football when somebody drops from the first round that maybe he was supposed to be a 10 to 15 pick and then drops to late second round. And you're like, oh, shit, like, is this guy's career in jeopardy? It's right. not like that in baseball. So I'm not worried about it. But I think that I do think that he has a good shot at making a run at it. And we could see him move up the ranks pretty quickly.
I agree with you. I think Connor Norby's just a stud. And I think he is an excellent pick for the Orioles. Like I said, I think they got him with a steal because I think he was someone that had the talent and the caliber to be a first-round pick.
Let's not forget that he led all of college baseball in hits
right,
this year.
Right.
With 102. Right.
So the dude is no scrub. That's all we're saying. The dude is no scrub. He's far from it.
Against quality pitching at that.
But moving on to my guy, my personal favorite guy on the team the entire season, one Thomas Francisco. I yep. just love that man's name. 571 to the Cardinals. You know, Francisco, you know, he was one of those guys that could just kind of do it all. I know he's not like the complete package like a Connor Norby or somebody else out there. That's why he fell that late. But talk to us about Thomas Francisco going to the Cardinals, what he means to that historic franchise, because it's hard to be a great player or to be a great player with the St. Louis Cardinals. They've had so many greats. They are an organization that is accustomed to winning, and if they don't win now, they want to get a fresh crop in order to win now. So tell us how Thomas Francisco can fit into that system in St. Louis.
Yeah. So Artie, I don't know if he will fit into the system in St. Louis. That's my thing.
Okay.
Francisco is a junior, so he's got another year of eligibility left. Excuse me. I don't know if he goes. I think that he could stay and maybe move up a little bit higher.
And I think he should. I really think he should stay another year and improve his worth and move up.
Because he used to have 40 rounds in the MLB draft. Since we have this dumbass Rob Manfred in office running the show, Rob Manfred, winner of the most times on Walk the Plank.
has he?
Probably.
Okay. I know he's been on there at least twice, maybe three times.
I would say it's pretty damn close. Yeah. So yeah, Rob, like he shortened up the farm systems. Now you only have four levels when you used to have like six. I mean, you have less prospects. It's There's more competition, but with that, you also have a shorter draft, a shorter American draft, right? So with that being said, I think that it might bode well for Francisco to come back, focus a little bit more on maybe building some muscle, adding some a little bit more power to his game, and then going. I mean, honestly, Artie, anybody could play first base or be a DH if you can hit in the MLB. Anybody. If you [S2] Right. [S1] Can hit, you can do it. Okay? Francisco can hit, but he needs to maybe bet on himself. It's one of those positions that it's hard to move up the ranks because first basemen a lot of times have a long shelf life on their career because they don't do much. I mean, I'm just putting it bluntly, right? So, I mean, you're looking at guys that have power, that can hit, and they put a bunch of runs up on the board. So, while Francisco can do that, and he's got some sneaky speed, I don't see him really playing anywhere else in the field. He can maybe – he's got the body type to maybe transition into a corner outfielder, but that's about it. I don't really see him playing anywhere else on the infield. So I think that it might bode well for him to come back to ECU and try to get up. And I think that if he does improve a little bit more in his senior year, he could move up to a 7-10 round guy instead of being a 19 round guy. So that's my thing. But if he does go, he'll join a bunch of ECU greats in the Cardinals organization, two of which friends of the podcast, but Alec Burleson, Evan Krasinski, and Chris Holba. I mean, the Cardinals love them some Pirates.
They do.
Which is funny because they're one of their biggest rivals outside of the Cubs is the Pirates.
It's the Pirates, so, yeah. They study us a lot.
So, yeah, they do love them some ECU baseball. I'm hoping he stays. I think it's best for him. But if he doesn't, and he goes, then we wish him the best. But I honestly think he's going to stay.
Yeah, I agree with you. And much like the next guy that we're going to talk about, I think it's best for Thomas Francisco to come back, prove himself for an extra year, try and make another run at Omaha, really be one of the captains and one of the leaders and one of the faces of the team. And like you said, try to get himself into one of those 7-10 rounds, much like a Bryson Worrell who went undrafted, which was a bit of a surprise to us. I do know that, you know, if the draft was the old length, he probably would have been taken. But how do you feel about Bryson Worrell not being drafted? And what do you think are his chances to come back to ECU and, you know, take that extra year of eligibility and play?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. He's in an interesting spot. He just finished his senior year at ECU. I think that we might see him back. He towards the end of the season, he dealt with some injuries, like his shoulder injury that he sustained in the conference tournament. I don't know if that played a factor in his draft. I wouldn't think so, but maybe it did. I wouldn't mind seeing him come back. He's a leader on this team, and I think he has more to prove. And if he can stay healthy, he could end up being one of those guys that's taken between rounds 15 and 20 or 10 to 15. He's a later round guy, but I do think he has an opportunity to go on and further his baseball career. And I mean, he's not gonna be a center fielder. Once again, he's gonna be a guy that is a corner outfielder when he comes out. And I don't know. Maybe he's willing to take the bet on himself and maybe try to sign an undrafted contract. But those rarely pan out in MLB. But who knows? We could be wrong. But I would like to see him come back and maybe try to make a trip to Omaha with Coach Godwin and hopefully Thomas Francisco as well.
Yeah. And look, above all else, you know, we want to congratulate Gavin Williams, Connor Norby, and Thomas Francisco for all being drafted. That in itself is an accomplishment. Just to say I got drafted in any professional league anywhere is an accomplishment.
Did you get drafted?
Hell no. Exactly. Hell no. So that's an accomplishment. Want to shout out those guys. I would love to see Thomas Francisco come back. Would obviously love to see Bryson come back. But switching gears a little bit, not that much, because we're still talking about baseball. Let's talk about the old.
This is an all baseball podcast.
All baseball podcast, baby.
In the middle of the off season.
That's how you know we're dedicated. But getting into the old ball coach, Cliff Godwin, got his contract extension. He is now signed through 2026. And it's interesting how they did that, because after each regional appearance, a year is added to Cliff Godwin's contract. But he is now officially signed through 2026. Jared, talk to us about Cliff Godwin, how we got it done, why he stayed, and then we'll get into the LSU rumors a little later down the road.
Yeah, this is something that I think was discussed between him and John Gilbert back in 2019. I think that's when this contract extension or this revision to the contract was made, mm-hmm. and this clause was kind of input into the contract. Basically, what this does, unless something catastrophic happens to our baseball program, Cliff Godwin's pretty much got a lifetime contract.
He's the guy. Yeah, he's the guy.
The only thing that's not going to have Cliff Godwin be the coach at ECU is him leaving for somewhere else.
Right.
So what this all tells me is ECU says, this is our guy, but at what point will ECU finally put the money behind it and say, this is really our guy? So to me, I'm hoping that they'll be able to do it. Right now, we all know the financial situation at ECU, but hopefully right now they're starting to get those wheels turning, and they may have a year or two before the next rumors of Cliff Godwin being a finalist somewhere else come up. I don't see him maybe being one next year. I just don't see many job openings being there next year. But who knows? I've been wrong before. But I do think that ECU is saying, look, you're our guy. We're gonna keep adding you on, because Cliff Godwin, we're gonna be a perennial regional team as long as Cliff Godwin's here, barring some year like we had back in 2016 when we had all those injuries and whatnot. Those things happen, but those years aren't going to happen as often when you have the pipeline that Cliff Godwin has built of talent, right, like he's built. I mean, this team consistently has a top 20 recruiting class in the country. So as long as he makes it to one regional, it doesn't even have to be a host regional. As long as we make it to the regional, boom, another year. So, to me, he's got a lifetime contract.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've been saying this since we started the podcast. Godwin is the guy, and as long as he wants to be head coach at East Carolina University, he's going to be the head coach. He's going to be the guy as long as he wants to stay there. I agree with you. He's got a lifetime contract. They're doing everything but coming out and saying he's got a lifetime contract. He's got that. So, you know, hats off to him. The next phase is getting to Omaha. Hopefully once he gets us there, because he's going to get us there, he stays after that. But, you know, that's all for the future. That's nothing we're talking about right now. And right now, I kind of want to get to the LSU ordeal a little bit, because he came out and said, you know, and you know how the media is. We like to, you know, stir up the pot. We like to say things. And
We don't stir up the pot.
Well, we don't, but we are a part of the media, so I guess
unless
we are part
NC
of that.
State fans, part of that, stir the pot.
A part of that community.
We whip it up.
Some things that were said that just were not true, and some things that said were kind of half true. He interviewed, but he was not offered the position. And honestly, it sounds like from his point of view, he was never really serious about taking the LSU job. So how do you feel about this whole LSU ordeal with Cliff?
I think it's what we expected.
Right.
Happened. I mean, he interviewed for the job. We all said we don't blame him for interviewing for the job.
Absolutely not.
I don't. I mean, I still don't. I mean, hell, I love ECU. But if LSU comes knocking and is like, hey, I can pay you $3 million a year to coach baseball, sorry. If they offer me the job, I'm gone. Probably.
Absolutely.
But Cliff Godwin, he didn't have to make that decision luckily. But I think this statement came when he came out. It's one of those things that you don't know. I mean, it's of course it's he comes out and he makes it, and it's well thought out. It's well prepared what he's going to say, how he's going to say things like that. When he comes out and says what he says, he basically says that, hey, I love it here. Glad I didn't have to make that decision. You all know that I love it here. You all know how much this place means to me. You all know how much this number means to me. You all know how much Omaha means to me. You all know that. And to me, what all this does is just solidify everything we already knew.
Right? Exactly. Exactly.
He said he wasn't offered the position. That to me, that's interesting. I didn't think he was. I don't think he had to make that choice. But to me, I think that this is big for the future, because hopefully we'll be better prepared next time, and we can make sure he doesn't have to make that decision. Once again, going back, we need to pay this man. Build the statue. Yeah. That was the title of one of the last podcasts. Build the statue.
Build a statue.
Right. Like it. Put him and Coach LeClaire on a statue side by side, and I guarantee you'll have 100% support.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And Coach LeClaire deserves a statue anyway. So, I mean, that's just a given. I think, look, all of Pirate Nation can breathe a sigh of relief. We know we've got our guy. We know we got our old ball coach, you know, and he's here to stay. And I think that's, you know, we knew that. We kind of both figured that was going to happen. But just to actually have it written in stone that we know he's going to be here for a while, and we know that we have to get some things done in the next couple of years, it's just exciting. And I'm very excited. We're always excited for ECU baseball, because we always know ECU baseball is going to be great. But just excited to see what more we can do with this now, knowing that Coach Godwin was going to be around for a little while. So shout out to that. Shout out to everyone that was drafted. Also want to give a huge shout out to Coach Knight, who was promoted to pitching coach. You know, Jason Dietrich left for Cal State Fullerton, and Austin Knight was promoted to the new pitching coach, was a catcher at Ole Miss, and served as a voluntary assistant for the last 2 years. So big shout out to him. You got anything to add to Coach Knight being named the new pitching coach?
Yeah, I mean, in Coach Godwin's statement about his LSU rumors, the thing that he also said, because he got brought up the pitching coach and the search for one, he said, hey, look, there's a lot of people interested in our pitching coach position. A lot of people interested.
Mm-hmm.
He said a lot of West Coast guys wanted to come out here and take this job, but he felt that he knows who's best for this job, right? That's what he said. He came out and said that. I know who's best for this job. And what he did was he promoted the guy he thought was best.
Right. He kept it in-house.
Exactly. And that's the kind of pipeline. You build a pipeline of players, but you also build a pipeline of coaches. And if you have somebody that's going to be a stud, you treat them right from the get-go, from the jump. And that's been the problem with ECU. We've had a lot of – we're not treating people the right way. I mean, hell, look at Lincoln Riley. If Coach Ruff had been given enough money to pay his assistant coaches, Riley might have stayed for a little bit longer.
They let go of Ruff, though. I mean, I still disagree with the way they fired Ruff. I mean, I was just absolutely asinine. I understand that we had a 8-5 year. His last year, we had an 8-5 year. I was like, okay, Ruff, you got to go, because we're gonna do so much better than Scotty.
It was a 5-7 year, but yeah. I mean, it's the same.
Oh, was it 5-7?
Yeah.
Scott Montgomery went 3-9 three straight years. So the way they handled that whole Ruff thing was just asinine to me. But you know, that's a topic for another day.
Oh yeah. Sorry, my wife just got home, so the dogs are out. We're taking care of the dogs this weekend or this week, so it's gonna be a loud time at the house. but yeah, Artie, that's really all I got on all the ECU baseball news. The only other news that really has come out, ECU is trying to get, I believe, 9,000 or 12,000 season tickets sold for football. So go join the Pirate Club. Go do that. Contact your ticket rep and buy your season tickets. It goes a long way to help our athletes, to help our program, all of our programs. And if we want to be considered a top-tier collegiate athletic program, we gotta start
acting. People gotta show up like to the games. I'm actually very happy you said that, because I want to kind of, you know, put an emphasis on people need to start showing back up to the FIC. Now, I understand last year, obviously, COVID happened. But even, you know, the years before that, you know, the year before that, a couple years before that, you know, attendance was dwindling. And I understand the kind of quality program that we had, but ECU is used to having a certain kind of atmosphere in Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium. Whether we're good, in between, or bad, we sell out 50,000. I mean, that's just what we do, that we live, breathe, and die football.
And we don't just do it when we play Carolina, NC State, and South Carolina.
Right. We do it when we play Old Dominion and, you know, NCANT, you know. So we need the support. You have no idea what it feels like to walk out of a tunnel and see 50,000 plus in the stadiums. Like, that by itself gets you amped and up to play a game. 20,000 don't do it. 25,000 don't do it. It's cute, but it don't do that. 50,000 plus, that does it. And so I really want Pirate Nation, and I want the students, you know, to actually kind of get back to what we used to be. Go out, tailgate, have a good time, show up to the game, support this team. This team is on the rise. We're not going to win an American Athletic Conference championship next year. I'm going to tell you that right now. We're not winning the American. I'm not going to go out and say that. But this team is on the rise. This team is going to get better. This team, I believe, is going to shock a lot of people next year, in my honest opinion. But it only starts when we have that support in the FIC, which was once considered one of the great venues in all college football because of the atmosphere that we provided for our football team. So I know we're going to get into football in the next couple weeks. We got less than 2 months before the kickoff of the season.
It's coming.
I cannot wait.
It's coming.
God, I cannot wait for that. But we won't get into all that this episode. We're going to get into that in the next couple weeks. We got some things lined up in the works. People might be coming on the podcast. Some guests that we've had before might be coming back onto the podcast. Great guests that we've had before. So we're really excited about that. And, yeah, go out, support your Pirates. But moving on from that, Jared, it is time for Walk the Damn Plank.
Walk the Damn Plank.
What say you on your Walk the Plank this week?
So we got three options here that I put in the notes here, Artie. And, I'm not gonna go with the first one, and I'm gonna honestly take McGregor.
Okay, I like that.
As somebody who chipped in and put and watched the fight,
you pay for the fight, yeah. You pay for the fight,
and which honestly, I haven't watched a UFC pay per view or paid for a UFC pay per view in quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
One of the better UFC pay per views that I've watched.
It was a good pay per view. The main event wasn't that great. But overall,
but the main event, it was still pretty good. It was just,
it was just one round. It was just that. It was just that first round.
It was very anticlimactic.
Right, exactly. Because I mean, they were going back and forth. I mean, Conor came out and he looked good.
He looked good.
Not like Conor looked like a scrub.
The first minute and a half, I was like, oh shit, my bet's about to hit. Like,
yeah.
I mean,
Conor looked good.
I'm not gonna lie. Kyle and I put some money on the fight.
Yeah,
McGregor. Win by knockout or TKO in the first round. I mean, that payout. We were about to pay for our round and then some. Our round of golf on one of the top golf courses in America and then some. So, that was to me. I was like, oh hell yeah! Like I was like, hit him. I was pulling for McGregor. My thing, Artie, is McGregor has always been one of the top trash talkers in all of sports. And I love it.
Yeah.
But you cannot be sitting on the canvas with a broken leg yelling at somebody who just talked about how they're building orphanages and whatnot in Guatemala. Yeah.
Like Dustin Poirier is one of the great guys in the UFC. Like he's a phenomenal guy.
You can't be yelling at him and his wife telling them that you're going to kill them in their sleep. And and that his wife's in his DMs. You can't be doing that. You just can't. What are you doing, Connor?
Yeah, you're sitting on the canvas with a broken leg. You obviously just lost the fight. I mean, had he not broken his leg and had a, you know, been able to go 3, 4, 5 rounds, who knows what would happen?
That fight wasn't going 3, 4, 5 rounds. That fight
It was going to be a knockout. Connor said it was going to be a knockout. Dustin said it was going to be a knockout.
That fight was going to maybe last into
halfway through the second.
Halfway into the second. I'm surprised it made it to where it did. I thought it would be over in the first. Either way, technically it was, but Conor McGregor. Hey, I'm still a fan, but
yeah,
the way that he kind of acted and handled himself, I didn't like that. I mean, it's one thing to trash talk, but it's another thing to completely just come out and say, like, I'm gonna kill you and your wife.
Honestly,
you can't say that.
He's becoming a bit of a Ronda Rousey, because he's becoming a face with no wins. So he's becoming all fluff. He's becoming all filler. Like, he's a face, and he's been the face, and he's been a two-time champion. And we know Conor is going to be a UFC Hall of Famer, and he's one of the greats. But he ain't got no wins. I mean, he's lost to Dustin Poirier twice in the last year. He's lost to Khabib Nurmagomedov, who choked his ass out. He's got no – and his only win is against Cowboy. And Cowboy,
lackluster fight.
Yeah, that was. I saw that fight at Hooters, and I was like, "Wow, happy." Oh, we did watch that together. Yeah, I forgot about that.
That's the night we almost walked out on our tab because they wouldn't come take our tag.
What a night that was! That was dope.
That night was. Oh my gosh!
But you know, he's definitely becoming a fighter with you know, he's just talk now, and I hate that, because I love Conor McGregor. Throughout college, we saw Conor McGregor's rise, and we saw him go from, you know, the underdog Irishman to, you know, almost billionaire status within 4 to 5 years. So still got love for the man, but he's got to really, like, buckle down, kind of lay low for a little bit, take a low level fight, try to get himself back up the rankings, and really dominate somebody in his next fight. Because if he loses again, nobody cares about Conor McGregor anymore. If he loses another fight, nobody wants to hear from Conor McGregor.
The next fight, it could be him, Poirier, for a fourth time.
No, I don't want to see a fourth time.
I don't want to see it, but it could be, given how this one ended. I could see him going with Nate Diaz again. And the thing about where Conor is in his career and who he is in UFC is he's only one win away from a title shot at any given time.
That's true, because you know Dana White loves him from Conor McGregor. That makes way too much money. Conor McGregor in a title fight makes way too much money.
And then you look at a guy like Nate Diaz or Poirier, and you talk about it. I mean, these are guys that, they're gonna make 50 mil to beat fucking Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to make 50 mil doing that. I mean, and if you're not getting the title shot each and every, like, right now, then, hey, give it to me. I'll take that 50 mil. I'll take 50 mil to stand in a cage with Conor McGregor. I mean, maybe not me, but if I'm Poirier or Nate Diaz, I would still take the 50 mil to stand in a cage with Conor McGregor. But
I'll take 50 mil against anybody but Kimbo Slice and Mike Tyson.
But yeah,
the only two people I wouldn't step into a ring for $50 million.
We've talked enough about it. The other thing, the Aussie, did you see that? The guy from Australia that beat Greg Hardy?
I did not. I missed that one. But I know that Hardy got his ass whooped. I know that.
And I was here for it. But this guy is jumping on top of the cage, drinking beer out of shoes.
From a boot, right? Or was it a shoe?
Just like tennis shoes. People are handing him shoes as he's walking out, and he's chugging beers at him. I was like, this dude is my kind of dude.
Now, if that doesn't sound like East Carolina, I don't know what does.
Give me that guy. I want that guy on my team. And if he gets another win and gets a shot at a title, that guy, he could be the next big name. It's like Tua Tuivasa or something like that.
Yeah. I heard the name. I did miss the fight, but I did hear what happened. But moving on from one loser of the weekend to another loser on the weekend, I am going to choose England. God almighty, England, woo! England. Look, no championship soccer match. And I actually watched this. I never watched soccer, but I actually watched Italy versus England, at least the last 50 minutes of it. I didn't watch the first half, but I watched the last half. And it was entertaining, but no championship soccer match should end in PKs. I think that's – I mean, it has to be done because obviously you have to have a winner. But it just sucks when it has to go to PKs. You love to see it happen in real live action. And England, they're used to being in second place. Shout out 1776. They're just used to being second place. But not only did they lose, not only did they give up a 1-0 lead to Italy, let them come all the way back, beat them in PKs, they celebrated being in second place. The fans literally went out and celebrated coming in second place at the Euros. That is, I mean, that they have accepted second place. I don't understand what kind of society is like, you know what? Second place, cool. We'll take it. We're happy with it. You know, we lost. We let Italy come back and beat us. They're going to take it back to Rome with them. You know what? We're good with second place. We're going to go out and celebrate this like we won a championship. England, you should be ashamed of yourselves. You lost. Take that L. Regroup. Recover. Come back next time better, even though you probably won't because you're England. You're probably going to come in second place again. And I got a lot of love for England, but I'm just saying. So England, to the manager, to the players, to the fans, walk the damn plank. That was embarrassing. But shout out Italy. They deserved it. Euro 2021 champions.
There you go. Well, Artie, I don't really have anything else to add to that. I mean, I know that they completely blew it. So, yeah, England walked the damn plank. Last time I cared about England was when we dumped their tea in the harbor.
That's what I said. Shout out 1776, baby. They used to be in the second place. They've grown accustomed to being in the second place.
They're used to calling on daddy.
Right.
A.K.A. the great country of the United States of America. So, Artie, my final thoughts. Great showing this week by – none other than ECU alum Harold Varner in the John Deere Classic up in, I believe, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Mm-hmm. I believe that's where it is. I think it's up in Iowa or Indiana or somewhere. It's in one of those states that, I mean, we all forget about. But sorry. So if you're from Iowa or Indiana, or if you're listening Iowa or Indiana, we're sorry. I'm sorry.
As someone who has been to Indiana a lot, I am so sorry. No, I'm not sorry for what I'm about to say. Indiana sucks. All right. Indiana. So I have been to Indiana a lot. There's nothing in Indiana but farms and corn and windmills. Indiana sucks.
Ball State. Woo! But Harold Varner finished, I believe, tied 11th. Made his way. I mean, honestly, there was a time on Sunday that I thought this man was going to make it and make a run at the lead. He was playing that lights out. I got to say, shout out to him. He'll be playing in the Open this week, the British Open, another major championship. So tune into that. You can watch it. I believe it's like on at like 1 o'clock on Friday morning. So if you're up, it'll be on. So yeah, stay tuned to that. Congratulations to HV3, future friend of the podcast. Mm-hmm. I mean, once he secures his spot, we're going to get him on. Once he secures his spot and secures his card, we'll be able to get him on, I promise. Eventually. So, yeah. Artie, that's all I got.
That's all I got. Pirate Nation, football's in 2 months, baby. Get your mind right. Get your mind right. It's coming.
You heard
Wash your hands,
man.
Wash your butt.
All right. We're out, Pirate Nation. Deuce. Peace.